The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here. Today
FM. Now this week, a serving member of An Garda Síochána was sent to prison for a 3-month sentence. So what does a Garda do to get sent to prison for a 3-month sentence? Well, wait till you hear. Conor Gallagher, crime correspondent with the Irish Times, is with us. Tell us about the conviction here of this unnamed individual, please.
Well, this was a serving Garda at the time, who in 2018 viciously assaulted his ex-partner. The partner came home to find the partner came home with her children to find the Garda on the couch. The guard got in a tussle with one of the woman's children over a music player, and then that proceeded to him choking her and holding her up against the wall, making her think she was going to die. I think a particularly heartbreaking aspect of the case was the children tried to protect their mother using their toy Power Ranger swords. And after the attack, the woman was left with broken fingers and severe bruising. And that was the second incident. There was another incident where he turned up at her house and was throwing things at the house and putting things through the letterbox, leaving her in a distressed state. So he was prosecuted. It was a case taken by GSOC, the Garda Ombudsman, because that's who the complaint was made to. He was prosecuted in the district court. He got a 6-month sentence with 3 months suspended and a €1,000 fine. It's a sentence that has caused a kind of significant degree of anger and frustration amongst particularly domestic violence campaigners.
Indeed. And we have Sarah Benson, who is director of Women's Aid. Choking can lead to death. Are you surprised that there was only a 3-month prison sentence, given that in addition, it is known that this Garda has been under the influence of cocaine?
Hi, Matt. Good evening to your listeners. Yes, it is a surprise to us, the sentence that's been handed down here, to be frank. I think we want to very much welcome one of the things that GSOC, the Garda Ombudsman Commission, has done subsequent to the case, which is to very publicly call on any woman who is being abused by a member of An Garda Síochána to contact them and to raise that awareness that there is recourse through them if they don't trust or have confidence in going through the Gardaí. But what we've described here and what Conor has described is something that could be described as an act of potential attempted murder, because strangulation has an incredibly high fatality rate. It's an incredibly dangerous thing. Also notable in this case was the fact that the judge referred to this person being a Garda as being an aggravating factor, and additional under the 2018 domestic violence legislation, it also gives guidance that criminal acts against a current or former partner should also be considered an aggravated factor. Now, I must say we struggle to see how two potential aggravating factors might have been taken into account here. I don't know whether it was because there was a factor as to which court this was prosecuted
in. This is the thing that baffles me, is that given the seriousness of the charges, why was this in the district court? Why did the DPP bring it to the district court? Or why did the judge not say, look, you'd be better off going to a higher court where there might be a bigger sentence in the event of a conviction?
Indeed. Well, obviously, I can't answer what deliberations or considerations were made by the DPP, but it is certainly a question when you hear the description of you have broken bones, this was not an isolated incident. And as we know through our work in Women's Aid and of all of our colleagues in the domestic violence sector, is that coercive control, domestic violence, physical abuse, all of these things are patterns of behaviour. They are not isolated, standalone incidents. The victim herself described the level of distress, the fact that there's a continuing fear of this individual. And, a sentence like that when, kind of the different structures that are in place to allow for time served and good behaviour and all of those things, it doesn't really seem to fit the experience. And 2019, we published a report a sentencing watch report where we had consulted with a number of women who had experienced, been subjected to domestic violence, gone through the criminal courts, and we saw a huge gap in terms of the experience and the traumatic experience of having to go through that protracted process. And then the level of sentencing. And unfortunately, the majority of the women consulted said that even where a conviction was secured, that they would not or would seriously think about whether they would have gone through the process again. So that shows a real failing in our criminal justice system for a most serious, serious crime.
Conor Gallagher, was there any explanation given by the state's authorities as to why this case actually went to the district court, the lowest of our courts?
No, that matter would have been heard at a previous hearing when the case was in for mention. Unfortunately, I don't think there was a reporter there for us. I certainly wasn't there for it. But it's a matter for the judge. As you said, the case goes before a district court judge. Assault causing harm is one of those offences that can be tried both in the district and the circuit court. And it's up to the judge to say, hold on, this is way too serious. This is going to a jury trial. And judges have huge discretion in that. It is very strange that it was kept in the district court in this instance. The district court has a maximum sentence of 12 months for a single offence, no matter what the actual max sentence on the statute book is for that crime, while the circuit court has a max sentence of 5 years. So he pleaded guilty, so he was never going to get the max sentence, but the percentage sentence he would have gotten the circuit court would presumably have been a lot higher than obviously what he got in the district court.
But Conor, there was also evidence, wasn't there, about the use of cocaine in it? And again, is that not a prohibited drug which causes issues if a Garda is discovered to have been using an illegal substance?
Yeah, he didn't face charges in relation to the cocaine, but it did form part of the evidence. The woman's testimony was that when he was choking her, he appeared off his face. Actually, the most emphasis was put on the cocaine by the defence, by his barrister, who said his client had become addicted to codeine and cocaine. So there was no evidence, direct evidence of him taking cocaine, which is generally what they'd require for a Section 3 drug offence for possession of cocaine. Obviously, though, if he was still a Garda, that would have implications for his continued service in the Guard. But he resigned shortly after his arrest for this incident.
Now, Conor, is this an absolute rarity within the force, or do we know of other instances of drug abuse within an Garda Síochána, and do we know of other incidents of assault by Gardaí against family members?
Well, to start with perhaps the drug abuse, last June, the Drew Harris announced the establishment of the Garda Anti-Corruption Unit, which is a unit that's kind of up and running now and is investigating corruption and wrongdoing and misconduct within the Guards. And one of the issues raised by that unit so far has been drug use within the Gardaí. The Guards say that drugs are a common feature of Irish society, and the Gardaí come from Irish society, so it follows that they would be a problem within the Guards. Drew Harris hopes to tackle this by introducing random drug testing before the end of the year or early next year, and this will involve roughly 5% of the force having to undergo drug testing every year, and that 5% will be random, obviously. On the domestic violence front, unfortunately for the Guards, there's been several domestic violence and sexual assault related stories in the news recently involving Gardaí or ex-Gardaí. My colleague Conor Lally the other day was reporting that Gardaí are now required to disclose if they have any barring orders against them in the family court, and 21 Gardaí have come forward so far to disclose that they have barring orders against them, and Garda management actually expect that number to increase as more Gardaí realise that they are obliged to come forward with this information.
Is that a shock to you, Sarah Benson, as Director of Women's Aid? Because I know you could say, well, maybe that's proportionate to society in general, but maybe perhaps we expect Gardaí, given the position that they hold, to operate to higher standards.
Well, we operate the National Domestic Violence Helpline and would speak with tens of thousands of women over decades now. And unfortunately, it is a factor where we do hear of serving members of an Garda Síochána also being perpetrators of abuse. And while, yes, indeed, you have a cross-section of all society will be represented in different institutions and organisations, I think it is true to say that we should expect those who have not only access to unparalleled levels of information, such as through the Pulse system and power, and also such trust, that the Gardaí should be held to a particularly high standard. And one of the things that the Commissioner did also note this week, and our last week, and this was in the following on from the conclusion of the Sarah Everard murder case in the United Kingdom, and looking at what had arisen in relation to the murderer there and his history that had not been picked up by the Metropolitan Police. He has also said that he will be doing a review of not just domestic but also sexual violence in all forms, and look at that in the context of vetting for potential new members among Garda Síochána, and that's something that we definitely welcome.
Yes, because Conor Gallagher is the case, isn't it, that Commissioner Drew Harris, since he joined the force in 2018, has made rooting out corruption one of his main tasks.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that's been one of his key pillars of his tenure so far, this kind of drive for anti-corruption. Now, that's not all just him. He is also reacting to the findings of the Commission on the Future of Policing and the various tribunals that we've had, and the Garda Inspectorate report from last year on the risks from corruption and misconduct. But certainly the pressure has been turned up on misconduct on all levels, and lots of that's been welcomed by Gardaí. You probably remember a couple of weeks ago there was a story about Gardaí being investigated, not arrested, for allegedly passing on information to the Hutch criminal group. Two Gardaí have been suspended there. Things like that, and things like, you know, clamping down on domestic violence are welcomed by the vast, vast majority of the force. But Drew Harris's clampdown on relatively more minor cases of wrongdoing has caused some, perhaps drop in morale is the best way to say it, and some tension within the force, particularly between the GRA, the Garda Representative Association, and Garda management.
Well, indeed, and you had a fine piece in the Irish Times about that last weekend. There's actually a piece you've got that's just gone up on the Irish Times website, entirely different, that I want to ask you about, because you've done a very interesting investigation into the anti-vaxxer campaigner Dolores Cahill and her work on Facebook. And you've shown in your analysis that she has been allowed to continue on Facebook despite making dozens upon dozens of incorrect charges.
Yeah, well, listen, I'd love to take credit for the investigation. The investigation was actually carried out by the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, which is a group that monitors COVID misinformation and hate speech online. But yeah, as you said there, Miss Cahill, who was a UCD professor before stepping down in September, has gone from strength to strength in terms of her social media following. And this is like at the same time as Facebook are coming out and saying that they're clamping down on pandemic related misinformation. So she founded an organization called the World Doctors Alliance, which is made up of 12 academics and doctors, including several who've been struck off or suspended. And this analysis looked at all 12 of their Facebook pages and found out that their growth had grown exponentially. At the start of the pandemic in January 2020, they had maybe 3,500 members. Now that figure has grown to 460,000 members, and that's a 13,000% increase. And that growth has continued in recent months at the same time as Facebook have been coming out and insisting that they're clamping down on this type of thing. Ms. Cahill herself has been fact-checked 75 times under Facebook's internal fact-checking system that they're always rolling out and touting as evidence that they're taking this seriously. But her page remains very active, and it's got almost 150,000 followers and continues to post misinformation at will.
Okay, Conor Gallagher from the Irish Times, thank you. And Sarah Benson from Women's Aid. Actually, Conor, just very quickly, this listener has asked a question which I should have asked you in relation to that Garda. Why wasn't he named?
Yes, that's a very good question. He wasn't named because the prosecution, and it came from the prosecution, said there are the children in the case were witnesses, so children are entitled to anonymity, who are party to the case are entitled to anonymity under the Children Act. Now, you can make the argument that you could get around that while still naming them, and that, you could leave out other aspects of the case which would allow you to name the guard. Some people might see it as the guard being protected. I don't know if there's any...
I can understand why it is to protect the children. Okay, thank you very much for being with us, Conor Gallagher of the Irish Times.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.